Next case that we have is United States v. Shea, and we'll hear first from the appellant.
Good morning, Chief Judge. Good morning, honorable members of the court. I'm Major Isaac Kennan. I'm joined today by Captain Patrick Clary. We represent Airman Patrick Shea, the appellant in this case. May it please the court. Judge Hecker's removal without explanation on reconsideration.
Counsel, for some reason, I'm finding you hard to understand. Could you speak up a little?
Yes, sir. I apologize. Judge Hecker's removal without explanation on reconsideration, once this case had been remanded back down to the Court of Criminal Appeals, created two problems. The first problem is that Airman Shea had a right, whenever possible, to receive a court of constant composition, and that did not occur because Judge Hecker was available to serve.
How do we know that?
We know that from the government's pleading, Your Honor, that Judge Hecker continued sitting in other cases after she had been removed from the Shea case.
Isn't that one of the problems that we're dealing with here? I mean, there could have been a legitimate reason. She could have recused herself for personal reasons. We don't know what those reasons are, so that leaves us with a big void.
That is true, Your Honor. The record shows no evidence that Judge Hecker recused herself. If she had recused herself, we know from past decisions that the method of doing that is RCM 902, manual disqualification. And when you look at RCM 902, notice would have been given to the parties. The parties would have been given an opportunity to question her. The fact that that didn't occur suggests that that was not the means of her removal. In fact, the record indicates that Judge Hecker was removed by the chief judge because an order was issued under signature of the clerk of the court, and a new judge was detailed, which could only be done by the chief judge, suggesting that Judge Hecker was removed by the chief judge.
Okay, let's go back to the original premise.
Yes, sir.
And the original premise is that he's got a right to have her there. Where's that come from? This isn't a formal reconsideration. This is a remand. It goes back to a panel. If he gets a roughly same panel, nice. But people come and go all the time. Are we supposed to freeze the membership of an appellate court so X gets the same panel?
Whenever.
What's the basis for that assertion?
United States versus Robertson, Your Honor. Whenever possible, yes, the panel should be frozen. And that may not always be possible. For example, in the Robertson case.
Is the phrasing whenever possible or whenever practical?
The case uses the word possible, Your Honor.
Okay.
And in that case, for example, one of the appellate military judges had retired in between the two decisions, and this court's predecessor found that, therefore, it was not possible for that judge to serve. And we take no issue with that.
So it's the CCA rule that uses practical.
That's correct, Your Honor. But this
is there a difference between possible and practical?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that possible is more stringent. Some things may be possible but not practicable. And in terms of your question, Your Honor, about the difference between reconsideration and remand, this court remanded the case. The Court of Criminal Appeals remanded nothing. The Court of Criminal Appeals reconsidered the decision that had been rendered regarding sentence propriety. There was no remand by the Court of Criminal Appeals. This court conducted a remand. The Court of Criminal Appeals did a reconsideration of the specific question of sentence propriety, and by having a different panel, because the panel was differently composed, it ran afoul of Article 66 Alpha. Article 66 Alpha, of course, just provides that a panel decision will be reconsidered by the court sitting as a whole. By implication, that means one panel cannot reconsider the decision of another. And the legislative history bears that out, that was Congress's intent. And they have They had a lot of reasons for that that were articulated during the committee hearings. But the ground truth is that one panel cannot reconsider the decision of another. And so, in fact, the panel that conducted the reconsideration in this case simply lacked jurisdiction to do that, which is the prejudice. Airman Shea had a right to have reconsideration done by a court with jurisdiction to conduct that reconsideration, and that did not occur. Instead, a panel with no jurisdiction to reconsider the decision of another panel set in judgment, which is the prejudice.
So if
go ahead, Kevin.
So if you could flesh out this idea, we're flying blind about why she didn't sit on this case, Judge Hacker.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you're saying that we should infer from the record that the chief judge removed her?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why shouldn't we assume that if the chief judge took that action, the chief judge was acting within his authority and doing so appropriately?
Well, Your Honor, there's no... The problem is that appellant objected and filed a timely objection to Judge Hecker's removal. And at that point, it would have been incumbent upon the Court of Criminal Appeals, the chief judge, or the court as a whole, to explain its actions as to why Judge Hecker was being removed so that this court would have the benefit of those reasons, as opposed to a record that is devoid of any reason for her removal when she was lawfully appointed and detailed to the case and was available to serve.
So why should a process foul like that, if indeed it was one, result in us overturning the case?
Well, Your Honor, you would not overturn the case. You would return it to the CCA for consideration by a
different panel.
A panel of constant
composition.
You're not
going to get what you want, though. So what is being solved here? Judge Hecker is not going to be on this case.
I don't know that to be true, Your Honor. Judge Hecker is still in the service. And we're speaking outside the record now, and I apologize for that. But she's still in the service. She's still subject to orders of the Judge Advocate General and can be put...
She's a reservist, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Right, and so isn't that an entirely plausible reason why she wasn't sitting on this panel, because she was not on active duty at the time that it was returned by us to them?
It is plausible, Your Honor. The record is silent as to whether that was the reason, but that is a plausible reason.
And is your position that somehow this smacks of unlawful command influence, that regardless of whether it does or whether there was a good reason, a bad reason, or no reason at all, that you were entitled to this person, what exactly is it that you are arguing?
For the first granted issue, our argument is that Airman Shea was entitled to a court of constant composition unless there was a good reason that needs to be reflected in the record as to why he should not get that. And that, obviously, the second granted issue is the appellant's proposed reason as to why Judge Hecker was removed. Admittedly, to that second issue, the fact that Judge Hecker continued serving on other cases hurts appellant's arguments on that. I think we have to concede that if she were going to be removed because of the government's pleading in Rivera, she would have been removed from all cases, one would think, and she wasn't.
Counsel, where was she attached?
I am not sure, Your Honor. The record is...
She was attached somewhere.
She was.
She was a Category B reservist. I spent 21 years in that program. You're attached somewhere. Where was she attached?
I would be speaking outside the record. I would assume to the Air Force Legal Operations Agency was where she was attached.
You mean to JAJM?
Or to the command, some unit within that command was likely where she was attached. But
well, if you're a judge on the court, you're attached to the court. I was three times. This is a question I'm going to ask the government too. There is a big mystery as to her status here.
Yes, Your Honor. It's clear that the Judge Advocate General detailed to her to the court.
The Judge Advocate General does that with reservists and regulars alike.
It's clear that he
appoints judges.
Yes.
And in the case of a reserve judge, they are attached to the court for duty. You know, they're all assigned to the fighting 905th, which used to be in Denver and I guess is now in Georgia. But they're attached for duty to where they work. And in the case of the judge, he's attached for duty to the court.
I don't know where Judge Hecker is.
Counsel,
your unlawful command influence argument is obviously a difficult one to make given the lack of facts in this case, and we have to do some speculation. But it occurred to me that there's another issue lurking out there, which is an ethical issue, and that involves the Air Force appointing a person to two jobs that on their face appear to be in conflict. Was there any? Did you give any thought to raising the ethical concerns? I'm not saying the judge did anything. She's subject to orders that put her into what appears to be two incompatible positions, or at least the appearance of that.
Of course, I was counsel in the Rivera case as well, not representing Airman Shea at all. And I did have that concern alongside government counsel when it was first brought to my attention that Judge Hecker was duly appointed to both be part of JJM and the appellate court.
Well, yeah, this is a curious situation because now you guys want her,
and
you've got this rather big conflict out there, and the government's saying throw her off, and you're saying we want her, and no implication whatsoever as to her ability or honesty or anything else, but it certainly is a big apparent conflict.
Well, Your Honor, in the Rivera case, the government sought clarification of Judge Hecker's detailing status prior to the decision coming out.
Well, then maybe the government can enlighten us on that.
And I joined the government in seeking clarification.
And what did you get?
I got an order from the Court of Criminal Appeals that explained that Judge Hecker was cordoned off from any conflict. And thus, I felt that any meritable...
Wait a minute. Any conflict in what way?
That they had established walls so that she...
There was a Chinese wall in JAJM, or there was a Chinese wall in the court?
Both, Your Honor.
Oh, both.
And so based off of that, I felt that there was no meritorious claim of recusal that could be made.
Isn't there a great big appearance problem?
One presumes that the Judge Advocate General knows and follows the law and took measures to ensure that Judge Hecker was not conflicted. And especially when I received...
Those measures are not a matter of record.
I'm sorry?
Those matters are not on this record.
The Judge Advocate General's reasons?
Well, the measures taken, the Chinese wall, the whatever, they're not in this record. Thank you.
No, Your Honor.
Just to be clear, Judge Hecker did not participate in this case on remand. That's what you're actually complaining about.
Yes, Your Honor.
I just wanted to make sure that...
Yes, Your Honor.
Major, can I ask a question here? Earlier you referred to, you used the term, the accused has the right to have his case reconsidered by the same panel. But were you using the term reconsider in the colloquial sense? Because when a case is remanded, isn't the lower court carrying out the mandate of this court? It's not really a reconsideration in the procedural sense when the case is still at the CCA, right?
In this case it was, Your Honor. Certainly not always. Sometimes cases are remanded for purely procedural wickets to be turned. But in this case, this court remanded to the Court of Criminal Appeals for it to reconsider the question of sentence propriety.
What it says is it says opinion of the court upon remand. I mean, that's how it's styled. It's not, opinion of the court upon reconsideration. And we gave them a fairly discreet task, right? We said you can't approve the sentence that was adjudged by the court martial. You can only approve the sentence that was approved by the convening authority.
And you tasked them to... I don't want to speak for you, Your Honor, but you tasked them to reconsider the sentence appropriateness decision that had been previously made.
Well, we told them that they couldn't do what they did.
Mm-hmm. That is correct, yes.
Yeah, but, of course, sentence appropriateness is purely their power,
exactly.
Under 66,
so
not ours.
They could have, said, well, gosh, now that we've thought about this again, we're going to give them no sentence, right? I guess.
Well, obviously. appellant would have hoped that he would have gotten more relief.
I understand what they did is they originally included the forfeitures. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And then the convening authority had not approved the forfeitures. So when they took action on remand, all they did was put the sentence in line with what the convening authority had actually approved.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So no worse off, better off.
Better off. Appellant received relief by the panel that lacked jurisdiction to give it to him.
Counsel, I see your time has expired. You'll have additional time on rebuttal. Now hear from the government.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Roger Bruce. Colonel Oler, Major Steer, and I have the privilege of representing the United States in this case. The United States respectfully asserts that appellant's panel on remand was properly constituted and that appellant has failed to meet his UCI burden. With permission of the court, I'll address issue two first, the UCI issue, which does have some spillover to issue one. Appellant provided no evidence at UCI, and he has not proven any unfairness in his case.
Do you think that there's any whiff of an ethical issue in this case, with having an individual, a federal judge, appointed to be a federal judge, and concurrently appointed to be an executive in the agency that represents the government?
Your Honor, we absolutely raised a concern to the Air Force Court that she can't simultaneously serve at JJM and on the Air Force Court at the same time. That was the basis of our ultimate motion in the Rivera case.
But that whole issue, which is, I think, continued because she's still in the dual positions, as far as I know, has seemed to slip between the cracks now.
Well, Your Honor, you ask a very fair question. There is a provision in the judicial canons followed by the Air Force Court that says a military judge cannot serve in those two capacities at the same time. For a reason that I cannot explain, there's an exception for reservists. It doesn't make sense to me, but that's in the Air Force judicial
Counsel,
canons.
Can you enlighten us as to where she's attached?
Yes, Your Honor, I can.
Where is she attached?
I would turn you to JA 45. That's an order from the court dated 26 October 2015. Which says, effective 15 October 2015, Colonel Karen Hecker is attached to AFLOA JAJM.
As the senior IMA.
Correct.
The TJAG has also considered her appointment as an appellate military judge.
That's correct. Not as an attachment. Not as an attachment, but as an appointment.
Wait a minute. She's a reservist. Yes, she's either attached or she's not.
She is attached to JAJM.
JAJM. Okay.
That is correct.
And what does JAJM do? JAJM does Article 69. JAJM does congressionals relating to military justice.
Correct.
JAJM formulates military justice policy.
I agree, Your Honor.
Okay. So now we have someone who's a sitting judge, continued as a sitting judge basically by the fiat of the Judge Advocate General, who's sitting over here doing her day job, doing all this other stuff.
Yes, Your Honor. That's why...
You know, this happened once before. This happened in 1992 when I was first attached to the Air Force Court. There was another guy who was attached to the Air Force Court. His name was Lauren Pearlstein. He was the GS-15 Deputy Chief of JAJM.
Yes, Your Honor.
That blew up in everybody's face in a case called CIHA, H-C-I-H-A, which was not reported, but you can find it.
Yes, Your Honor.
He eventually was attached. He was reattached. And now it looks like we're doing it again.
Yes, Your Honor.
They're not learning from experience.
I don't dispute your points, Your Honor. In fact, that was the reason, as officers of the court, we felt compelled in the Rivera case to file our motion to clarify her status.
But your point is, number one, there isn't a UCI.
Absolutely.
I'm more interested in... The argument that he has some right to the same panel.
Your Honor, we can quickly talk about issue one as well. Happy to do so. I would like to return to UCI because I have some things that I think need to be said. But on issue one...
Well, has have they... Is UCI an issue here? Have they asserted it?
It didn't Didn't you already say that they presented no evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. I agree. There is no evidence of UCI. I absolutely agree.
So if there's no evidence of UCI, what else is there to talk about?
Well, Your Honor, if I may, and I will be quickly, very quick on this point.
Is this one of those cases where we have UCI floating around but nothing concrete?
At best, Your Honor, at best. Absolutely nothing concrete.
A specter or a miasma.
It's a challenge, Your Honor, to essentially litigate two cases at the same time, which is what the appellant has asked us to do. As I prepared for the oral argument, I prepared a chronology of these two cases to see where, if at all, they intersected. Was there a connection between these two cases or not? And I found none. Most importantly, the reason I found none was because Judge Hecker was not on the AFCA panel when the case was redocketed with this court after this court's remand. Because she was not on the panel, she was not later removed from it, as asserted by the appellant. As the appellant notes on page 3 of his brief, his case was redocketed after the remand at AFCA on 3 January 2016. And that's also noted at JA 47. On 1 October 2015, AFCA published a new panel composition order. And it shows Judge Hecker was not on panel 2. That's JA 29. On 8 April 2016, AFCA published a special panel notice in Shea, this case, stating that the case was withdrawn from panel 2, which did not include Judge Hecker, and it was referred to a special panel that did not include Judge Hecker. Simply put, Judge Hecker was not removed from the Shea case after the remand, and so there can be no evidence of UCI whatsoever. And I felt that that was important to state. We absolutely agree there's no evidence of UCI here. And frankly, it's unfortunate that we had to defend against this issue.
When did she fall off the panel, the original panel?
I don't think that it's actually reflected in the documents that we have, Your Honor. But what I do know is on, at least as of 1 October 2015, she was no longer on panel 2. Yes, Your Honor, that is in the record at JA 29. I have other things I could talk about UCI, but I'm not going to waste the court's time. Let's talk about issue one for just a moment. AFCA correctly denied appellant's motion where he objected to a different panel hearing his case on remand from this court compared to the original panel. Their order is at JA 87, and AFCA got it right. AFCA correctly rejected the appellant's misplaced reliance on Article 66A and case law concerning reconsideration, which this most definitely was not. There is no statutory or case law authority to support appellant's claim in Issue 1. AFCA, in that order at JA 87, also drew the appellant's attention to this court's decisions in Roach and Thornton, which were also remanded cases to the CCA. But in Roach and Thornton, this court remanded it for a new 66 review by a new CCA panel. Well, if you can send it back to a new panel of judges, certainly what happened in this case was not an issue as well. In fact, if the appellant was correct, CCA judges could never retire, die, or be reassigned. And, of course, that would be absurd. Even if you apply the law concerning reconsideration, though, which we don't think you should, we think the result is the same, and we rely upon this court's decision in the Witt case, where this court held, we have continuously, since the UCMJ was enacted, held that military courts have inherent authority to reconsider their own decisions. And the court went on to state that the CCA had authority to reconsider its previous en banc decision, even though the composition of the court had changed. So even though the composition of the court changed from Shea 1 to Shea 2, if you want to call it reconsideration, there was no problem in the way it was carried out.
Would it be a good idea for the Air Force CCA when a case is remanded from this court and there is the composition of the panel is different, put a little asterisk up there and says that this panel is different because blah, 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 blah.
Your Honor, that would be a best practice. I certainly would agree with that. But as this court has noted in some of its prior questions, the fact that she was at that point only a part-time reserve judge does indeed give a plausible explanation for the chief judge's actions in this case. And I think we should presume that the chief judge followed his court rules when issuing that special panel notice. There's no reason for the court to reach a contrary conclusion on that.
But we're still forced to do a little speculation.
Yes, Your Honor. But I think we cited cases in our brief that you should presume regularity when a CCA is following its own court rules, Your Honor, and I think that's what should happen here. If there are no further questions, may I briefly conclude?
Please do.
Bottom line, there was no UCI. The panel was properly constituted. This court already affirmed the findings, and now that the reassessment, not the reconsideration, the reassessment was properly conducted, it should affirm his sentence. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Do we have a rebuttal?
Members of the court, it is true that in the joint appendix, the 1 October 2015 panel composition order does not include Judge Hecker in it. But the government's own briefs show that she continued serving. She authored opinions after that date. So the government's argument that she was no longer a court of criminal appeals judge after 1 October 2015 would be problematic for cases that she's authoring after that date, long after that date, into 2016 in cases. So the joint appendix has evidence in it that she remained on the court after that panel composition order was issued, which just bears out that the record is not clear as to why she was removed from this case or when she was removed from the court at all.
Do you think that it would be fair for us to say that that in our view the statute doesn't require that you get the same panel when we remand the case, but that it would be the best practice?
I think that's fair, and I think that goes in line with the...
You said in Robinson.
Yes. There's no statutory...
And with the Air Force's own rules.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
that. The Air Force's own rules.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't think there's a statutory basis for appellants. I admit that. There's no statute that says it has to be the same panel again. When you look at Robertson and you look at the cases, the state law cases that are cited in Robertson for that proposition, it's clearly a policy decision, the desire to maintain uniformity and standardization of the law, the principle that a court's decision should not change merely because its personnel has changed is the basis of the Robertson decision. I've never contended that it's statutorily derived. Or constitutionally derived, for that matter. I'm sorry?
Thank you for that.
Yes, Your Honor. But it is long-standing precedent of this jurisdiction that carries a lot of weight.
Well, it's the Air Force's own rule, right? They should follow their own rules.
Yes, Your Honor. In terms of the unlawful command influence, not spent a lot of time on it in the argument. I'll stand mostly on the briefs. But it is... What we have here, if you're a citizen looking in on this, if you're my mom or dad with a high school degree, you see federal prosecutors impugning the integrity of the Court of Criminal Appeals and a judge that's sitting on it and the judge advocate general for having detailed her. If that doesn't create the appearance of impropriety for that court, it would make any reasonable person looking in think that maybe those federal prosecutors have something here and there's something wrong with this Court of Criminal Appeals.
Are you referring to that in the context of Rivera and not this case?
The government's motion in Rivera acknowledged that it had implications beyond Rivera. They specifically said it would impact 13 other cases. So when the government filed its motion in Rivera...
Wait a minute. Are you implying that the government, by pointing out a... possibly significant conflict of interest, is impugning the integrity of a judge and the court? I don't think the government said anything like that. The government said, you got a big appearance problem here, the same appearance problem that blew up in the Air Force's face 25 years ago. What are you saying? You could equally say that having this big appearance problem would seem to Joe on the street to be a big problem.
Your Honor, I'm saying when the sovereign's representatives file a public pleading saying that this judge should not sit because she does not look unbiased, the public is likely to believe them. Why wouldn't they? Why shouldn't they?
The problem is that the person didn't sit on your case. saying? So, I mean, it's a little bit problematic in terms of imputing the integrity of the panel that actually decided your client's case.
Or from a public view, maybe her removal was an acknowledgement of the court that the...
You were better off. You should be glad she didn't say that.
Assuming your argument is correct, you can argue that this indicates that there's a problem with the system, but it doesn't appear to filter down to this particular case.
It indicates that the government thought that there was a problem regarding Judge Hecker's detailing that impacted many cases that may or may not include this case.
I agree with that.
If there are no further questions, thank the court for its time.
The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until further order of the court.
All rise. The court is adjourned until further order of the court.